And so I just wanted to kind of outline a few of the other general categories where, you know, we've been, you know, responding in terms of direct service when requested.
Sure. Thank you, Chris.
Yeah. And Nathaniel Whale?
Thank you,
Mr. Investor. So first of all, Brian and Chris, thank you so much for your explanation of what you're doing. I appreciate that. But I guess just a couple of ways to maybe drill down into things again to help Mary Ann out with some concerns of at least one of our leaders. So two things, and I'll say I appreciate your explanation again. It makes a tremendous amount of sense. But two things. First of all, is this service provision been fairly uniform geographically throughout the state? I mean, I know your headquarters is in Windsor, but is that happening fairly uniformly throughout the state that you're able to get rehab teachers out to people's homes under these particular conditions, O&M instructors, out fairly uniformly throughout the state?
This guidance, it covers the entire Bureau, so it's been issued out to every employee of the Bureau. There's no regional variation.
Go ahead,
sir. No, go ahead, Nathan.
I'm sorry. I'll let you finish, and then I'll go to the second question.
And I just in terms of adult services per se, where I imagine most of, you know, obviously you may have clients who are active in VR as well, but so again, to reemphasize, all the staff are made aware that these, you know, are the protocols that must be followed, and as is always the case, I am dependent on the staff to bring the issues to me, although I do entertain calls directly from clients. I am happy to return a call to a client if they have anything that's of concern to them that they feel their staff person in adult services is not sufficiently attentive to. And I absolutely agree. We are using the same standards. I think we mentioned that up until like a week ago it was Brian, and now since it's been delegated to the supervisors, I'll be using the same standards regardless of where in the state the request comes from. Yeah.
And again, Chris, that's actually very helpful because you're explaining the fact that the authority for approval has just recently changed. I would suppose that may be helpful. I suppose it wouldn't necessarily be uniform since you're dealing with multiple supervisors, but certainly some that will have a greater number, and that is a fairly recent development and one that I fully support. As a question or perhaps a suggestion, I do know that because I know the people there personally, one of the out-of-state training programs for blind people in Louisiana for the blind, and you will probably find others as well, have developed have been teaching throughout the pandemic using best practices that they've developed. Just as a thought or suggestion, looking at the best practices that they used, is that something that you would find helpful as you evolve your standards to continue reopening?
Well, this is Brian. While I appreciate that, and I've actually seen some protocols that are being followed through some other programs, whether they be allowing visitors for the day or whether they're allowing folks to remain there in a residential capacity, I've been following the guidelines that come out through the state of Connecticut, what the governor has issued through his reopen plan,
sure,
what the Department of Administrative Services has offered as requirements to allow individuals, be they visitors or employees, to enter a state facility. And then I even looked at what CDC's most recent guidance has been in order to factor these documents. So while I appreciate the offer, we are utilizing the tools and the mechanisms that are made available to us through the official lead is the governor and the governor's office and their indications of what's permissible in administrative services for anybody who wishes to come to a state facility. So I really feel that updating our document based on whatever those official updates are that we get is where I'll be turning to. If other facilities, as I indicated earlier, other facilities such as schools or residential programs have additional protocols that go beyond ours, and we still have to follow their protocol as well. As an example, some of them may still be taking temperatures. There's a lot of question as whether taking a temperature is or isn't a viable. The guidance we have requires us to ask the individual if they have a fever, but we aren't personally taking anybody's temperature. Now, if some other entity says, like, you can't enter the school unless we first take your temperature, then that's, you know, certainly something we would have to respond to and agree to if we were going to go into that facility. But I guess that's the best way I can answer it.
Sure. Thank you, Brian. Again, that's very helpful. I certainly realize, that you have things that you need to do your job faithfully. So thank you. That again is helpful. And again, I'm glad to hear that the approval has been delegated down and will likely, if anything, spread the workload out onto other people instead of it all coming to you. So thank you.
You're welcome.
Al, I just wanted to say, as only one humble supervisor, I will say that just so everybody understands, the supervisors meet have been meeting throughout this entire 6-month pandemic when we've had to change our way of doing business at least weekly with Brian and Andrew as the two managers who are obviously Brian is the director, I beg your pardon, of this bureau, lest anyone think that this is sort of an ironclad policy that hasn't changed at all. We meet on it was originally twice a week and now it's once weekly to review changes in the guidelines that are issued through the governor's office and additional information, and so we are and have been constantly examining any changes, not just in the epidemiology, I guess, but also in the guidance that were issued by the governor. I think everybody is really attentive to trying to see to the greatest extent possible how we can continue to provide services and take into account any changes that occur. So that's a constantly ongoing process is basically what I wanted to say.
Very good. Thanks, Chris. I appreciate that. Any other questions on coronavirus updates?
Yeah, Brian.
Hearing that. Oh, yeah, go ahead, Steve.
Yeah, excuse me. The other thing that we should be aware of, you mentioned this the other day, is that there are penalties for group gatherings, too. Not just, going into somebody's house, but if we're involved in groups or thinking about it, we got to really think about the seriousness of going into groups, because up in May, they had a wedding, and several people became ill from the wedding. And I know the governor has issued penalties to go into effect starting Friday night this week of certain penalties for group gatherings, and that's important to keep in mind as well. The limited numbers that can be together if they're, and you know, not to exceed it, because there's a lot of stuff going on. And I know here in retirement, we're still sheltering in place. And we're told we will be doing this until at least January of next year, although we're gradually, you know, getting back into the dining room. We used to have food delivered to our place. Now we're gradually by appointment and six-foot distancing and all of that. That's what we're following, all those codes, you know, stuff the governor puts out. I just wanted to make you all aware of that.
Thank you, Steve, and I really appreciate you bringing up that point. And I did issue that out. I did forward that from the governor's office. Yes, there are some fines if groups exceed the allowable limits. And like I said, I just forwarded that guidance, and I hope that folks take a look at it, because there are those penalties that Steve was talking about.
All right, very good. Let's move on to the next item then. We have the VR draft policy for personal adjustment programs. I'm acting on the assumption that everybody has had the opportunity to read it, and I'm not sure if it requires some form of preface, but if you'd like to offer that, Brian, I'll give you the floor.
Okay, thank you, Al. The only piece of feedback I've gotten from the SRC or the advisory board was, in fact, from Alan. And Alan pointed out that we had one very long sentence in what would become the last paragraph of the revised document, and it would be a paragraph that has a sentence that we would then break into two sentences. Right now, the proposed language says, I'm going to read it if it was implemented as is with the changes proposed. It says progress reports are required in written or electronic format at 2-month intervals for the duration of the training program curriculum, and continued authorizations for training should be based on the demonstration of reasonable progress toward mastering the personal habits, attitudes, and skills identified in the training providers curriculum and the documented need for additional training. Our chair astutely recognized that that was probably about the longest sentence he's ever read, and he was suggesting that we put a period after program curriculum so that it would then say the last sentence being continued authorizations for training should be based on, and then it would be, you know, concluded as proposed. So that again was the only piece of feedback I got. The state Rehabilitation Council needs to take this up at their meeting next Wednesday and then, you know, deliberate on whatever changes you might make to the proposed draft. And then this process still would require a 30-day public comment period, so we'd have to do a public hearing, and then it would come back at the December meetings for a final vote after the public comment. So that's what I would just offer up.
This is Al. I do have an additional suggestion for that very paragraph. In fact, the first paragraph reads in part, in written or electronic format. I would suggest we change that to accessible format, because some people are going to be reading that who have disabilities, and I think it would be more encompassing if we just say accessible format.
Individual.
Okay, so we've got now two just modifications that are accessible format, and put that period where Alan had recommended it. So I guess it's up to you folks if you wanted to do some sort of a motion in a second, and however you want to do it.
So do I hear a motion to adopt the draft? To pass it along to the State Rehab Council.
This is Mary. Yeah. Yes, I make a motion that we adopt the draft.
Do I hear a second?
Second.
Did I hear a second?
Yeah, second by Steven.
Okay, Steve seconds it. Okay, very good. All right, any discussion?
Yes, this is Eileen.
Sure.
Because of the device I use, none of the underlining, if there was any, shows up. So I'm confused. Brian, I could you, one of the areas that I don't understand is the reporting requirement as proposed. Could you just elaborate on that, or maybe tell me if about anything that was underlined, because I couldn't get that.
Sure. The language as it's proposed would, as you may recall, the members of the advisory board wanted there to be something that remained in the policy on progress report. So the way it is worded is that progress reports are required, that was in the existing policy, but I then deleted the part that says a periodic interval is agreed to between the provider and the post-rehab counselor, and replaced that with what Al has now just proposed. So it would say, progress reports are required in an acceptable format at 2-month intervals for the duration of the training program, period. Then the new sentence, which takes what was part of the existing policy but adds some clarification to fix some of the issues that were presented at the last meeting, it now would read, continued authorization for training should be based on demonstration of reasonable progress, which was existing language. Now here's the new language, toward mastering the personal habits, attitudes, and skills identified in the training provider's curriculum and documented, and the documented need for additional training. That last part being in the original policy. So we did add the piece about not just the skills, but we've added the personal habits and attitudes. We've acknowledged that it's tied to the provider's curriculum, so whatever their curriculum is, the duration of the curriculum is going to dictate how long the person's there. And then I deleted all the stuff after that, which had to do with the state director approving things and the vendor having to turn in certain things in advance in order to get approval. This now just makes progress reports in 2-month intervals with the report showing that they're making progress. And they need to still work on things. That's pretty much what it says. Just as an aside, though, I had been told previously that putting an asterisk in front of and at the end of wherever changes were made allowed for a screen reader to pick up on it, even if the screen reader didn't pick up on the underline. So that's why I have these asterisks that show up, and I put that in the key. So I guess if people aren't finding that that's helpful, I'd be open to suggestions for any other ways to make it so that a screen reader would be able to pick up on where proposed changes and deletions are.
No, Brian, this is Eileen. I think it's helpful to the extent that it can be. I happen to use a device where it comes up in Braille, so it's it's another iteration from a screen reader. So that's just my accessibility, but your explanation is extremely helpful, and I appreciate that. Thank you.
Thank you.
Randa, I had a question. So I understood.
Sure, go ahead, Randa.
Yeah, from what I could understand from the parentheses about, you know, that what was in parentheses would be taken out, brackets.
Right.
So the 12-week limit was taken out, correct?
Correct.
Okay. So what kind of, I didn't understand where is there some limit at all? You know, monetary or time or anything?
No, it's based on the curriculum of the training provider, based on all the deliberations at the June meeting to the SRC and the advisory board. The consensus that I walked away from was that we were to establish arbitrary parameters around the length of a training program, and we would let those that provide the training program and have curriculums for those training programs decide how long they need in order to fulfill that. And the analogy, I believe it was given at the June meeting, was that we don't tell someone who wants a bachelor's degree in accounting that you can only go for 2 years when it's a four-year degree. A bachelor's degree is 4 years. So therefore, if a training curriculum from this particular vendor is 6 months, then for us to say, well, we'll pay for 12 weeks, and if you want more than 12 weeks, you've got to go through all these additional things in advance, was kind of basically circumventing their curriculum. And so we want to allow the vendor to say, this is our curriculum, and we let the client make an informed decision if that's the program they want to go to based on their curriculum. But then we would require these two-month interval progress reports.
So if after a certain amount of time the individual is not making progress, then it's considered to continue or to end it because they're not, you're not, they're not pushing what they're.
Well, I believe that it talks. I think it's a continued authorization. It's kind of clear that continued authorizations for training would be based on demonstration of reasonable progress toward mastering the personal habits, attitudes, and skills identified in the curriculum and the documented need for additional training. So I think that's covered in that sense.
Right, right. Okay. All right, thanks.
So this is Eileen.
Yep.
One more question. So, Brian, are you, I'm wondering about, is this going to incur, or could this incur a lot of additional funding from the Bureau that could jeopardize other clients who need services? You know, the distribution of funding.
Well, when I get into the budget report, I think that I'll be able to ease those concerns. But the Voc Rehab budget is looking fairly good at the moment. I'll explain some of the reasons why. But the fact is that with this newer policy, which went into effect a couple of years ago, I had mentioned at the June meeting that the net effect of the policy was quite a significant chilling effect on the number of individuals that were going to these types of programs. So while the goal may have been to somewhat reduce the amount of funds being spent on the service needlessly, it seems that the outcome was to have greatly reduced it, even potentially for somebody who might have otherwise chosen to go. You know, I've only heard anecdotally about some of the reasons that fewer clients were going to these programs. But either way, I think that the policies, all policies need to be written in a way that they don't exclude, you know, reasonable opportunity to get the services you need to achieve your employment outcome. And so, while there certainly will probably be an increase in the number of dollars spent on personal adjustment programs, it's nonetheless a requirement of the VR program that you have to make your policies reasonable so that people can actually access those services.
Thank you.
Excuse me, this is Mary. Unfortunately, I have to leave. Yeah, I apologize, but I have another meeting and I have to leave.
Brian, do we still have a quorum when Mary leaves?
Well, I would say if you want to try to take your vote before she leaves, you know you do, because I don't know who we've lost. But.
Okay. I don't want to. Well, we're in a dilemma here. I don't want to cut off discussion, but by the same token, I want to be able to take a vote so we can send this along to the State Rehab Council so they can have their say about it. So without objection, I'm going to go to a vote on the motion. Hearing no objection, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
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 Any opposed? Any abstentions? Okay, the motion passes, and the draft policy goes on to State Rehab Council for their review. Our next item is...
Thank you.
All right, thanks, Mary. Our next item then is... Sure, go ahead. Who's that?
Sam.
Hey,
I'm also having to leave because I have another Zoom meeting now.
All right, very good. All right, thanks,
everybody's running these meetings close together, so.
Very good. All right, the only other thing we need to vote on is adjournment, so we don't really need a quorum for that. Well, we need a majority, so thank you, Sam, and thank you, Mary.
Thank you.
Okay, our next item then is the budget update. Brian, I'm going to give you the floor for this one.
Okay, and I'm going to actually be covering things very rapidly because we are past adjournment, and I actually have a 12:30 meeting I need to be on, and so since you need me, I think, to keep this line open, we'll go quick. But the Voc Rehab Program just received $1.2 million in reallotment funds, which is certainly good news. And adding this money on top of the current VR dollar, it does indicate that we would remain able to serve all eligible individuals into federal fiscal year 2023. So that is certainly good news. Certainly good news. COVID-19 has had a tremendous impact on Voc Rehab funds. There, frankly, were far more reallotment dollars available for states to request, but states are having trouble not only achieving their maintenance of effort requirements because they're not able to spend money. Many of the vendors weren't providing any services whatsoever and are only now just starting to offer services. So there's been very little to spend dollars on. So in actuality, there's still funds that couldn't be claimed because states couldn't match those dollars to request them. We were unable to expend our supported employment youth match money because we were not able to have clients in supported employment settings. The vendors weren't doing placements for quite a number of months. So we ended up having to revert back our entire supported employment grant of $45,000 to make it available to another state who potentially could utilize that money. So I think that from that standpoint, you know, certainly the reallotment dollars, I don't anticipate there'd be any negative impact on our ability to provide supported employment services just using our basic Voc Rehab dollars, but it is significantly impacted on the state. The same thing with the free employment transition services. You know, you have to set aside 15% of your budget on free employment transition services, but when those vendors that provided those residential summer programs, as an example, weren't running this summer, so we had virtual programs that were far less expensive, and so hitting that 15% for pretty much all of the states that run Voc Rehab programs has been quite of a challenge this year. In business enterprises, as you know, we get a fair amount of funding into the program through the sales of vending products, sodas and snacks, things along those lines. But again, with so many public buildings being emptied or on greatly reduced staff, there's nobody in the buildings to buy these vending products. So as a result, we have seen about a little over $100,000 in reduced income since COVID hit because of the greatly reduced vending commission. In the deaf blind program, because again, community-based services were curtailed because of COVID, they were only able to expend about $144,000 out of the $265,000 allotment because there was no opportunity for services to be offered. And so what we're hoping that now services, especially with the guidelines I just put out, are going to get reinitiated. But this is just to give you some highlights of the budget and where things are at, and that's the budget report.
Any questions regarding the budget?
Well, this is Randa. Brian, I'm just to clarify for myself, the $1.2 million for the VR, that's just for BESBE, not, that doesn't include for the other Bureau of BRS?
Correct. Okay. That is correct.
Did they do a...
Yeah, they asked for a reallotment as well, and I don't recall what dollar figure they requested, but they received what they requested as well.
Good. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Any other questions regarding the budget? Hearing none, then let's move on to the legislative update. Andrew, you have the floor.
Well, I want to be brief. The Connecticut General Assembly was originally established as the General Court in 1639 under the Fundamental Orders, but throughout the 17th century, I think I should just skip most of that. I'm going to skip most of that. We plan to, by the end of the month, submit to the governor's office and OPM basically the bill we submitted last year, because it never went anywhere. Nothing went anywhere because of COVID in mid-March. And that was really largely technical. We were making some changes to the Assistive Technology Act. We were making some changes to our statutes where there was duplication, like the power to accept gifts from benefactors appears three times in our statutes, because BSBY had it, CDHI had it, BRS had it, and a couple of other minor changes. And so we'll be asking for that again. The legislature is due to go into another special session, but I am confident that they will not be taking up any legislation that affects us. They'll probably try to be quite narrow. What happens in the future with budgets is still hard to know, except it probably won't be great. The agencies are already being asked to come up with budgets that scale it back from the current level, and we'll see what the legislature does in the winter. They'll be back in session with a newly elected General Assembly in January for a five-month session. We'll be paying attention, and I'll report to you anything significant that develops, but it's hard to know what will happen. We'll be putting in our same bill last year, but it was largely technical, and so I don't really have much more than that to report, Mr. Chairman.
Thanks, Andrew. Any questions for Andrew? Hearing none, thanks for the report, and let's move on to points to the good and welfare. Anybody have anything they'd like to contribute?
This is Eileen. I'm just asking that the board, that this advisory committee express condolences to Andrea Giudice on the passing of her grandmother.
Oh my God, yes. Oh, by all means.
And this is Brian. The only thing, point that I would have is Mary Burgard, our book rehab supervisor, has been out on extended leave and will be out for a while. So if you have voc rehab-related questions or issues, I've taken on that role as well. So come to me.
Okay, very good. Thanks, Brian. Any other points to the good and welfare?
Can we, this is Stephen, can we get cards out to both of these people?
I think that's a great idea. Brian, would it be possible for us to do that?
Certainly, if you folks, you know, want to send out cards, that's absolutely fine.
Well, I was just thinking, you know, it shows that it came before the board. They don't have to read the minutes, but they got it's a personal note from all of us.
Yeah.
You know, to cheer them on.
Hello?
Yes, yeah, no, I definitely agree with that. Further points to the good and welfare. Hearing none, we'll entertain a motion to adjourn.
Eileen, so move.
Okay, we have a second.
Second.
Miranda.
Steve seconds. All right, then, all in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Any abstentions? Okay, we're adjourned. We'll see you in December on the 10th. Thanks,
okay.
Everybody.
Nice report.
Bye-bye. Have a good day, everybody.
Happy holidays to those for whom it's appropriate.